Hello. Welcome to the St. Philip the Apostle School Social Studies Podcast. I'm Mr. W. This is episode 3, and in this episode we have the boys team together to discuss basically the same issues that we did with the girls team on episode 2. It's a sort of a little competition to see who can produce the better podcast between the two groups. As I mentioned last time, the 8th grade and the 7th grade will be listening to them and voting on it through Google Forms to see who did the better job. So today is the boys' chance to discuss. In segment 1 for the girls, we discussed the Bill of Rights and the other things that we were learning in class. So we're going to go ahead and do that after we've gone around the table. So why don't you each take a turn introducing yourselves, starting over here.
Hey, I'm Kevin.
Hi, I'm Stuart.
Hi, I'm Brandon.
Hey, this is me, Ryan.
Okay, so in class we've been discussing the Bill of Rights, and the Bill of Rights are the first 10 amendments, the most controversial of which is the second, like we talked about, but also there's the First Amendment about freedom of speech and things like that. So why don't we go ahead, and if anybody has a place they'd like to start, you can jump in, otherwise I can give you a prompt.
This is freedom of speech, right? You talked about the freedom of speech. So I think the freedom of speech would be more, I think it'd get pretty controversial when you're talking about, like, protesting. I don't know, like, give me an example, one of you, where you protest and you would need the idea of freedom of speech.
Religion.
Yeah, that's a good one. So what we could do was, help me out, come on, you guys are just sitting there.
All right, so we want to discuss the First Amendment. What are some ways that we discussed in class the First Amendment can be used by even people your age to get their point across?
The way you dress and stuff, fashion and all that.
What you write on social media.
The First Amendment over here says that the Constitution prohibits making any law respecting an establishment of religion, impeding the free exercise of religion, abridging the freedom of speech, infringing on the freedom of press, interfering with the right to peacefully assemble, or prohibiting the petition of government redress of grievances. So I think that's what it's saying, is that it's giving us rights to do what we want peacefully. That's sort of like a, I don't know how to say that.
Like a peaceful protest?
Yeah, something like that. You, let's see, like in respecting the establishment of religion, we could sort of relate that to, what was it? I saw something on the news the other day.
What? Well, we could wear crosses, since what you wear is like a sort of freedom of speech. You could wear crosses, and that's basically...
It's true. They can't make a law about wearing any sort of religious icon in public. They can't make any laws about that, so it's true.
One of them says infringing the freedom of press. That I think that's saying that you can protest by putting things like in the newspaper. So we couldn't put anything about like killing the president. That'd be pretty bad. But we could say that we don't like the president, but then they couldn't like persecute us, because that'd be infringing the freedom of press. So we could talk, but do it peacefully and not like screwed up. So
we have to like choose our words.
Yeah. You have to be careful. Stewie, what do you think? Peacefully assemble. You could be not too happy with your mayor. I don't know. That's an example. So you could assemble, but you don't want to end up like a riot. That'd be kind of bad. Example of that, I guess, could be like Martin Luther King Jr. and how he would want to peacefully assemble, or like the boycott. You could boycott, I guess. That'd be an efficient one.
On the contrary, they in Missouri, where they started off peacefully, and then, or a couple years ago, and then
just escalated.
And then the African Americans started escalating to people getting killed and beat up.
Yeah, that kind of got away.
So the police had to get involved and stop them.
What was that part we did that recently? It was where the government has the right to shut down any protest. What was that?
Well, you have to get a permit if you're going to do a protest. So if you don't have the proper permits, then the government is allowed to shut it down because you don't have the permits to do so.
What kind of power was that? It was like implied. What was it? You know what I'm talking about? I just did
that. Yeah, that would probably be one of the implied powers.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Implied powers, I guess.
So going through what we've done in class, what is something that you guys found interesting or learned that you wanted to share on the podcast as something that was a nice thing to learn or a neat thing to learn or something that you liked? Let me start over there.
I thought that the 8th or 9th Amendment was smart with James Madison to write that these aren't, or that the first 7 or whatever the amount of amendments they had were not the only ones that you had, or they weren't the only
rights
you had. Yeah. Besides, there's more, but they're not written in the Constitution.
Good. So you found the 9th Amendment to be really interesting?
I thought the 1st Amendment was pretty interesting because, like, all the different types of freedom of speech, like freedom of what you get to wear, freedom of what you put on the internet, freedom of religion. It's really interesting that all these different freedoms you have in one amendment.
What are some ways that we learned about expressing your freedom of speech that you found interesting? Like, you know, we did things with song and we did things with like video. So which medium do you think is most effective, or did you find most effective when we were doing it in class?
Well, I don't really know like which would be the most effective. I hadn't like seen anything very.
But to you personally, like, which one of the examples we used spoke most to you? Was it the written articles? Was it music videos? Was it news videos?
Personally, I thought it was the music videos, because there's a lot of people in the world that listen to music.
Good.
I like the 2nd Amendment the best because it's the most controversial, like how you can't have like a tank or a nuclear bomb just like in your backyard.
Sitting around.
Yeah.
Mr. W would do that.
So you like the idea that the idea of the 2nd Amendment in terms of like you like to discuss it.
Yeah.
You enjoy that discussion the most.
Yeah, just because like debating it and everything.
Yeah, you can get pretty far out there with that one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That amendment could be very dangerous.
Yeah.
When it comes to people talking about it.
I think the 1st or 9th Amendment was one of the ones I liked most. Adding on to a little bit what Stewie said about the 1st Amendment. It can get pretty controversial when it comes to what you can do. There's a lot of implied powers in there. But the 9th Amendment I thought was pretty important. It sort of is like tricky and you have to figure it out in a way that would, you know, would work. Not just something that would be like, if the president implied it, he could, tyrannical and stuff. But, you know, you gotta figure out what the sentence means without seeming too wrong, you know. But I think the 1st one was my favorite, the 1st Amendment.
I've wondered, since you get the freedom of speech, why Twitter doesn't take down all the ISIS quotes and everything they write, because they're not technically U.S. citizens or part of the United States.
Well, there's the concept that because it's a company, none of that stuff matters anyways. It doesn't apply. Private companies can regulate speech kind of however they want, which is why you can get fired from your job for saying something on the internet. But if it's a government job, it's harder for them to do that. So, but also there's international law that governs things like freedom of speech. The United Nations recognizes that freedom of speech is one of the inalienable rights that you're born with. So when it comes to that kind of stuff, they usually, if you want to use the term, hide behind that. That's what they would hide behind. Also, you have to remember, when we learned about it, there was something like 90,000 tweets a day from ISIS-related accounts, and being able to comb through that many of them and deciding which ones are actual ISIS accounts and which ones are retweets and which ones are retweets used to make fun of those tweets or whatever it may be, becomes a problem that a human being has to do. And Twitter's just not equipped to deal with that. Plus,
you gotta like track them down and stuff.
Yeah. Plus, at that point, you're infringing on the freedom of speech of somebody from their own country. If they're posting from their own country, what are those countries' laws? It gets sticky on the internet with whose laws apply to whom.
Yeah. I thought one of the interesting things about that was how many they could take down in a day. You know what I mean? How they put their people to work. That sort of reminded me how they put their people to work. You know, it sort of reminded me of how like the people that created the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all those things. They how they could figure out how to put things in words so they didn't have to list all the like everything. Like you can't own a tank, you can't own a bomb. You know what I mean? Like they sort of put it in words that would seem logical enough. So I thought that was pretty interesting too.
So what is the most interesting thing you learned about the Constitution, or what is the thing that you found most useful to have learned about the Constitution now that we're pretty much done with that and we're taking your test next week? You remember that, right?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Gosh, yeah.
So we'll start over there. What is it that you thought was most interesting, or what is it you think will be most useful as you grow up to have learned about how the government works?
Well, I thought it was interesting that James Madison didn't want to write the Bill of Rights that was part of the Constitution, but it was good that he wrote it, so it was one voice talking throughout the entire Constitution instead of very many, and the fact that he was smart enough to condense it for people to interpret what he says.
I kind of agree with Kevin on that. I have the same basic answer. I thought it was pretty cool that, well, not cool, but like interesting that James Madison didn't want to write the Bill of Rights, but he did anyways.
And he did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Except for maybe with the wording of the Second Amendment, like we talked about.
Yeah.
That's a little confusing. Brandon?
I thought it was interesting how he did the one voice and how, like, we still do that today in, like, projects, how the teachers want us to have, like, one person doing something and then the other person doing the essay, so it's not all scrambled up your words because different people have different styles of writing. That's what I thought was cool.
And it could be really weird for somebody to transition to some other type of writing.
Yeah.
Like, we in class, Mr. W told us that he usually likes to write long sentences with big words, and maybe some of us don't like to write bigger words and shorter condensed sentences.
Good.
I thought the most interesting part of the Constitution was... I think some of us know this, but how it's one of the smallest in the world. It only has
about 16 pages.
Yeah, just like, about.
Well, other countries have like hundreds of pages.
Yeah, like 200, yeah.
We put in words that are explicit that we can understand, but still make it kind of straight to the point.
And it still works.
Yeah.
Several hundred years later. Kevin?
I find it interesting that the United States government helps the framework for other countries' constitutions.
Yeah, I heard about that.
But the fact that instead of having just one person in power, they decided that it's a smart thing to have multiple people, like the prime minister and the queen.
Yeah, we rarely advocate for a single executive like we have. We tend to advocate for a double executive, meaning a president and a prime minister, or a king and a prime minister. We are kind of an exception to the rule where, so far, we don't have an instance where the president has become a dictator, whereas in a lot of other cases, you end up with a government organized the way ours was with a single executive, where the single executive ends up just taking all of the power for himself.
Right, going tyrannical.
Right.
Well, you told us, couldn't the president would have to, like, bomb, like, a certain area?
He'd have to destroy the Congress.
The president would have to get rid of Congress in some way, shape, or form.
Not trying to give in you order any to be ideas able to do or it. Anything, I'm just saying.
Right. All right, so that's where we're going to have to end for today. So we'll come back with segment two, which we'll record tomorrow. And tomorrow we will talk about the articles that I sent them and the articles' topics, just like for the articles that the girls covered yesterday, are about the Syrian refugees and the Syrian crisis. And they will use the same three articles. So we'll see you tomorrow.
Adios.
Okay, welcome back to segment two of the boys podcast. So just like with the girls podcast where we did segment one on stuff that we were doing in class, segment two is going to focus on the three articles that I sent the boys. They all have to relate to the Syrian refugees and them being accepted into the United States. Just like for the girls, the sources were the same. unlike for the girls, though, when they were recording, the attacks that occurred at the regional center in San Bernardino hadn't happened yet, so that will probably have some impact on the boys' opinions that was not on the girls' opinions. So if you're a 7th or 8th grader and you're looking to vote, make sure you keep that in mind when you go to vote on who you think did the better job. That San Bernardino attacks had not happened yet when the girls recorded. All right, so we're going to go ahead and start with what you thought about the articles. Why don't we start talking about what you thought of the three sources? So what did you think of the different sources? So it was Fox News and we used Politico. So what did you think of the three different sources and which one do you think did a better job?
I felt like they were all had some sort of spin or bias on it. They did okay. I mean, like, there you could tell that the person that wrote it or the person that read it had a specific feeling towards it. So, yeah. I think one of the better people that did it was Politico. They kept their feelings rather deep down. You sort of had to, like, really, really, really read through the text to find out what they meant.
Agree with Ryan, what he says, because when you're going through it as a news person, you want to be as unbiased as possible, but with some other types of sources, you'll find that they are very biased towards one way or the other.
Okay. So, Kevin, which two did you find most biased, or which one did you think was most biased in his opinions?
I believe that the Huffington Post was the most biased because, as you did and as you said in prior in class, was that it originally was a blog, so now and it became a news. So
yeah, the Huffington Post started out as Arianna Huffington's blog, and then eventually it turned into a news agency. So go ahead, Stuart.
I agree with Kevin. The Huffington Post was definitely more biased than Politico.
Yeah.
Again, because it was a blog before it became a news website. And I thought that Politico was a lot more, like, deep into the information than the Huffington Post was.
Well, I actually liked the Huffington Post one just because I agreed with them. I agreed with their type of bias, even though I know you shouldn't have bias in like an article or anything, but I agreed with them.
So the Politico one, everybody agrees, is more middle of the road, whereas the Fox News and Huffington Post ones had clear biases.
Definitely.
So having done something like this, do you understand now why I don't use things like Fox News or Huffington Post as much in class? I more use things like Politico and CNN. Yeah. Right. Okay, so let's go ahead and discuss what was in the articles. So we'll go around the table and you can discuss whatever you thought or your feelings or thoughts on them were.
So in the articles, they were talking about how the U.S., if they should accept Syrian refugees and how many and all that type of stuff. And honestly, my opinion on them is the fact that I want to accept people, but I also want to make sure that our country is safe, because especially since the San Bernardino attacks and everything.
Yeah. I saw a few posts about that. I also felt that we should accept. I'm sort of up with Kevin, but there is a YouTube video called Straight to the Point or something, or In a Nutshell. That was what it was called. And it talked about how people being integrated into the country actually do better and how they are less likely to commit a crime because, one, you want to seem like you know what you're doing, but two, I think they're doing that because they know what it's like to have something bad happen, and they don't really want to be that kind of person. They feel bad. And so I felt like that sort of hit home with me, and I feel like we should start accepting more than 5,000, which is what we have accepted.
Yeah.
Well, the Fox News one was talking about how Obama wanted 10,000 in 2016. He wanted to accept 10,000 Syrian refugees. But I agree with Kevin how I want us to bring in more, but I also want us to be safe at the same time. And ISIS is, like, integrating into those Syrian refugee camps. And I think that, like, maybe we should be more strict on how we want them to come in and what they used to do and everything.
Yeah.
I liked the Politico a lot, because again, I thought it was like it showed a lot about what the Syrians were coming into the United States for, and also how Obama wanted to bring in more, but we weren't allowing him to.
So it sounds like the four of you all agree that we should help do something for the people who are being displaced, because I think we did a good job in class of explaining that the people are trying to escape something really bad. And so it's important to help people out who need help. But then, you know, Kevin brings up a really good point that you want to make sure that the people you're bringing in are going to be people who are safe. So that's the consensus of the four of you, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it hit everybody really hard, especially after that article about this a family trying to escape and their son dying on the little like shore. Rowboat or whatever they had on the shore.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
On the shore.
And then the picture of the boy washed up on shore.
That's where it really hit, I believe, all Europe.
Sometimes when we hear how many deaths that are over in Syria because of the civil war, we just see them as numbers. But you know, when we see like the one boy wash up on the shore, or you hear about someone important that you loved, it sort of makes you feel a specific way. It lets you sort of realize how lucky we have it over here and how we should help across the ocean. And so it sort of just feels pretty bad, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
And like if we were in their shoes, like we would want to get out, because not all of them are bad. A lot of them are actually good. It's just ISIS trying to like put them in there so that they could terrorize.
Yeah, they're good people in a bad place. Yeah.
Like I heard this story of where this man was trying to cross a river or an ocean to try to get to the U.S. with his family. It was the man, his wife, and I think his two sons. And his wife and his two sons drowned, and he was the only one that made it to the U.S.
And he said that he wanted to bury his children back in Syria, and the people that met him offered him salvation, and I think it was Europe. And he said, I don't really want to go anywhere now. I have nothing to live for. So it just feels pretty bad.
What I like about Germany is the fact that they understand that they were in a point like that before, back in the 1940s, and now they realize they should be accepting people too.
The Syrians are they're running for a lot of reasons. They want to leave because they want to find a better home, but they know that this civil war is not going to end anytime soon, so they just sort of want to like leave. But there's not enough like internal aid going on, you know what I mean? So it's you sort of just have to leave to get help. Another point that I saw on an article is said that children are going too long without an education. I think that if the civil war goes on long enough, that actually could become a very serious problem for that area. But I felt like that if we could help by sending like teachers or I don't know, like water and food, that we could be playing a bigger part in doing what we should be doing.
I think it'd be more useful to have them come instead of us sending teachers, because
that's putting teachers in
danger, and that wouldn't be that smart of an idea.
But I feel that the education, like it does in the United States, especially people of minority who don't always have the most money, with public schools, it really does help because it keeps them off the streets and out of bad areas. And I think that'd be good for people in Syria and stuff, so they can stay out of ISIS, hopefully, and decrease the numbers.
Yeah, if you look in the United States, education be the way to get out of certain situations. Like if you look at poorer communities, education is oftentimes seen as like the gateway to a better life. And so if you have an entire generation of Syrians who are not being educated, then you have a problem. The vast majority of Syrians who are leaving have good educations, but you're going to get an entire generation of kids who live their lives in a camp, right? The refugee camp.
Right.
You can't imagine these refugee camps have a like an educational institution. They barely have sanitary institutions. So you have to wonder what's going to happen to an entire generation of children who go without an education. Imagine if, you know, your entire generation's education suddenly stopped. And then for your entire generation, you are now stopped at an eighth grade level, and other people are stopped at, like, say, sixth or fifth or third or kinder. And then what happens to that generation in terms of, like, their ability to work, their ability to make decisions, rational decisions on who should lead them? There's all sorts of bad implications that will occur when you have an entire generation who has a gap in their education.
I think it would also help, like, if other countries got involved with the crisis, because on one of the websites that I've recently been on, CNN, I saw that there are still a lot of, like, half the countries in the world that haven't accepted any of the Syrians that are fleeing from Syria.
Yeah.
And even some of the countries that have accepted some Syrians haven't, like, accepted that much, like 6,000 or 10,000 Syrians per country.
Well, the vast majority of the Syrians who are displaced and Syrians who are refugees are kind of two different things, if you remember.
Yeah.
A displaced person means just they could be still in their country. So there's a large number of displaced Syrians still in their own country. But then the majority of them are in the countries that are around there. Right? Places like Lebanon and Iraq and Egypt to a certain extent. So they're bearing a huge burden when it comes to this, the refugees, even more so than Europe would be. So why don't we go around and we'll finish up with a question of, besides the United States accepting more Syrian refugees, how do you think the problem of the Syrian refugees gets solved internally in Syria itself?
Oh, that's a good one. You know, I think it could be solved if we sort of just, like, this is kind of stereotypical, but if we, like, took care of the problem. I'm saying that would take military troops, but We could take care of the problem, then put them on training wheels with our own help of our government, you know what I mean? Sort of show them the way, and, like, how, you know, forcing down another religion doesn't help. And I think if we did that, that would help in the long run, but in the short run, that doesn't seem very efficient, but I feel like in the long run that would help.
Maybe, like, helping them change their government so they have a stronger government that can, like, take care of themselves so they don't turn, like, so there's not, like, a bunch of rebellious groups who want to fight, and, like, make it more, not strict, but, like, I don't know if they're, like, corrupt or anything. Yeah, they're corrupt, but make them not corrupt and put new leaders there.
Maybe we could, like, take action with the military troops, as Ryan said, but not, like, take over Syria so it's in U.S. control, but still have Syria as a country, but, like, being not, like, controlled like the U.S. is controlling, like, Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, but it's still Syria. However, they would have their own leaders, but we, like, try to help them and guide them towards, like, the right way of life again.
I agree with Brandon. The fact that the reason why this entire civil war has happened was because the government, especially the people in power, were very corrupt. And people weren't happy with that, so
right.
I believe that if they take those people out of power and replace them with people that are the best qualified and they believe can do the best job, then I feel that that could help turn it around.
Okay. Yeah. All right, well, thanks, guys, for contributing. If you were listening, this was the second podcast of the two in the competition, so you can go ahead and, if you're in 7th or 8th grade, we'll go ahead and give it a vote, and then we'll see who people thought did a better job. Thanks for listening.